right, guys. Thanks for being on the call today. I just want everyone to know we have Shane from Anchor Loans on the call. And Shane, really, at this point, everyone else is on mute just to, you know, in case they're in a noisy area. But I kind of going to turn it over to you so you can kind of, you know, give us a little bit of background on you, your company, types of loans you do, and then we can do the Q&A.
Sure. Well, I appreciate you allowing me to speak to everyone. Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Shane Lex. I'm Vice President of Loan Originations for Anchor Loans, the largest hard money lender in the country when it comes to fix and flip investors. you know, a little bit about our company and some background. Our company was incepted in about 97, 98. We started lending money. We were a big part of helping to revitalize South Central Los Angeles. So we were lending, when we started out, we were lending to a lot of real estate investors that were buying at the LA County trustee sale, and we're buying a lot of deals in South Central LA. I think the first year that we started lending money to real estate investors, we got out about $25 million. And then the company just grew from there. So the background and as far as the starting point of our company, really the origin is in California in Los Angeles County. And what's happened throughout the years is our company's continued to grow. Since originating most of our loans in California throughout the years, we wanted to diversify our portfolio, and over the last couple years, we've expanded and are now operating in 24 states. We're currently originating, this year we're on track to originate over $1 billion, strictly to real estate investors and developers. Just to kind of give you some numbers based on our growth, in 2014, we originated approximately $425 million. Last year in 2015, we originated $715 million, and this year we'll be originating over $1 billion. One thing that's allowed us to do that is approximately a year ago, we sold a minority share of our company to a large private investment equity firm out of New York called Wofford Capital, because we were limited to how much we could originate on a monthly basis. We were limited to about 40 to 50 million just based on how quickly our deals were turning over. And so we knew that we could originate more, but we were restricted based on our capital limitations. So we brought them on. So we have relatively new partners, but what that did is that opened the floodgates for us to be able to originate more, diversify our portfolio, expand nationally, which we have and we continue to do. And now we originate approximately about $100 million a month on a ongoing basis, and we're continuing to grow from there and bring on new states. Our goal is to originate about $1.5 billion to $2 billion a year, with hopefully in the next couple of years possibly going IPO. But the only way that we're going to get there is to continue to expand our national presence and originate more, in states throughout the country. So every month we're continuing to bring on new states. If you guys go, you can go on our website. It's www.anchorloans.com. Again, www.anchorloans.com. And you can see the states that we're originating in. I would say right now the highest volume states that we're originating in, I would say, would be California and Florida. But every month our originations continue to expand volume-wise in other states. A little bit of background on myself. I've been with the company since 2005. Again, I'm Vice President of Loan Originations and also one of the partners in the company. I'm a big part of loan originations for the company. This year, I've originated $200 million for the company, and my niche is new construction. A majority of my portfolio that I'm originating are new construction loans for developers across the country. And I can tell you just where the market shifted, as I'm sure a lot of you are aware. You know, a couple years ago, probably less than 5% of our portfolio were new construction loans. And then as the market continued to get more competitive, investors had to find ways to build out equity. And they went from doing cosmetic remodels to larger additions and then into new construction. And now I would say probably 20 to 25% of our portfolio now are lending to real estate developers on new construction or large, heavy remodels. Just to give you guys kind of a brief overview as far as our programs and terms, because we have quite a few different programs, kind of just depending on the borrower, the track record, the asset, and so forth. I mean, the main thing I want to get across is, yes, we are an asset-based lender. So we put a lot of weight on the asset that we're lending on. Majority of the properties that we're lending on are 1-4s, including condos. A majority of our portfolio are guys that are doing this for a living, that have a track record, that you know, are doing these cosmetic remodels or additions, and they're coming to us for either just the acquisition funds, or they're coming to us for both acquisition and construction funds. Our rates range anywhere from 8 to 13%, depending on the borrower's qualifications and the asset and so forth. So just to give you an example, and location too, because as I'm sure you guys are aware, hard money rates vary on location. I would say California is the most rate compressed due to competition and the markets. So there's a lot of deals in California where we're lending to real estate professionals that are doing anywhere from, you know, 20 to 100 deals a year. And, you know, we're originating at up to 80% of purchase price or funding the repairs out of pocket, and I have them at 8%. You know, our points can range anywhere from 1 point for 6 months to 4 points for a year, again, depending on location and the borrower. So when you guys are kind of underwriting these borrowers up front, even though we're asset-based, there's some other things that we look at as far as the borrower is concerned. You know, we never want to set up anyone to fail. And even though someone can be buying a home run deal, but they have absolutely no liquidity to debt service the loan or to come out of pocket just in case the construction goes over budget, you know, that's probably a deal I'm not going to do. You know, I want to make sure that the borrower has, you know, funds to come in with for the down payment. I want to make sure that they have some reserves for construction overages. I want to make sure they have some reserves to be able to debt service the loan. I can tell you when I talk to an investor for the first time, the two main questions I'm asking the investor is, A, what's their track record? How many fix and flip or development deals have they done in the last 12 to 18 months? That's question number one. I want to get an idea of what kind of experience I'm working with, because experience and the amount of leverage is really going to be, and the location is really going to determine the interest rate. And the other question that I'm going to be asking the investor is how much cash are they working with in the bank? I want to get an idea of how much in reserves these guys are going to be able to show. So to continue off of that, so as you can see, you know, there's kind of a wide range of structuring these deals depending on the location, depending on the the borrower and the you know, the amount of leverage. And when I talk about leverage, just kind of a general picture, some standard programs that we have, we could be lending 80% of purchase price, like I said, and you know, they're coming in with 20% down, and they're funding the repairs out of pocket. We have the ability to fund the construction funds as well. Common program is, let's say, 80% of cost, where we're funding 80% of the purchase price plus 80% of the construction funds, which means that that borrower would be coming in with 20% of total cost. And our highest leverage program would be where I'm lending 80% of purchase price plus 100% of the construction. So they're just coming down with 20% of the purchase price. I can tell you that in a scenario like that where I'm in a high leverage position, it's much riskier for the lender. And that's why that ultimately affects the interest rate. You know, if I'm that's why I'm able to get guys that have strong experience that only want, you know, let's say 75 or 80% of the purchase price at the lower leverage deal. I'm not giving them construction funds. You know, I can get them down to 8 or 9%, whereas guys that want, you know, 80% of purchase price plus 100% of the construction funds, you know, I'm going to be 10% or higher because it's a higher leverage deal. And at the end of the day, when we're dealing with providing higher leverage, we have a fiduciary to our investors, so we want to make sure that we're underwriting the borrower, the deal correctly, and we're helping offset that additional risk by charging more. So in scenarios, if you guys are underwriting, and that's kind of, you know, a standard typical deal scenario for cosmetic remodels or smaller additions. Let's say that you're working with a lot of new construction guys. We do a lot of new construction loans in California, and I'm starting to see that market shift in other states, and more of those deals starting to come through. We're more conservative on new construction loans out of state versus our backyard in LA County. I'm going to be definitely looking more at a borrower's track record, specifically on new construction, if I'm going to be originating to a borrower who wants a new construction loan. I'm going to want to see that, you know, they've completed and sold a couple of new construction deals in the last, let's say, 24 months before I lend them money on a new construction deal. So I'm going to look closer. You know, a new construction loan, it's riskier for the lender. So there's additional things that we need to look at. But if I have someone that calls me that wants a new construction loan and I ask them, hey, how many new construction homes have you built in the last 24 months? And they tell me none, I'm not going to do the deal. It's too risky at that point. Now, on the other hand, if I have someone that comes to me and let's just say they're a new investor and they want to get into fix and flipping, and they're just going to do a straightforward cosmetic remodel. Let's say they're buying a deal and it needs $30,000 in repairs or $50,000 in repairs, and it's just a cosmetic remodel. Sure, you know, we like to help them get into the business, but since it's not a heavy rehab type of deal, someone that doesn't have any experience, what I'm saying is, yes, I will lend to them, but it's also going to cost more. For someone that doesn't have any experience, I'm usually going to be a minimum of at least 12 to 13% on the interest rate, and usually about 2 points for a six-month deal and 3 points for a year. So that's something to keep in mind, that even though we prefer lending to real estate investors that have a track record, we will lend to newbies, if you will, that are just getting into the business that have never flipped a property before. So hopefully that kind of gives you guys an overview of some of the different, you know, programs that we have, kind of how we look at things from a a lender standpoint. As far as our closing process, we are where we are, and we're doing as much volume as we do because, I truly believe we're the best in the business, and we're very efficient, and we can close quickly, which is very important in this business. You know, my motto is, you can't steal in slow motion, and we know that to get the best deals out there, you got to be able to move quickly. And that's why our average closings are about, for an existing borrower, someone we've lent to before, I'd say our average closings is somewhere between 5 to 7 days. For a new borrower that we haven't lent to before, I would say we're more like 7 to 10 business days on the closings. And the reason why I say that is because I see most delays in closing a file coming from, the lag of the new borrowers getting their paperwork in order for us to go to docs, having all the entity information, entity docs, everything that we need on the processing side in order to go to docs. That's where I see the biggest delay. When we're originating a loan for an existing client, we generally have all that paperwork already here and filed away. So, it moves through the process a lot quicker. So really the first step in the process on a deal is, first of all, I'm not going to waste anyone's time, my staff's time, your guys' time on a deal that an investor doesn't have an option to purchase. So unless I have a purchase contract or something showing maybe it's a refinance and something showing that they're on title, I'm not going to start working on the file. But let's just look at a purchase, for instance. Really all I need to start processing the deal is the fully executed purchase contract, an estimate of what the repairs are going to be, and what their estimated future value is. I ship that off to my evaluator, our in-house evaluation team, that generally evaluates the deal within 72 hours. And then once I get that evaluation complete, then I'm able to finalize the terms with whoever I'm working with, whether it's a broker or the borrower directly. And then once those terms are finalized, then it's getting in line for docs. If they're an existing borrower, we should already have everything so we can get in docs pretty quickly. If the new borrower, after we finalize terms, and it's just a matter of working with them on the borrower package of the items that we need in order to get in line for docs. Some basic information that we need. We're not like a conventional lender as far as the documentation process. We generally require a 1003 application, personal financial statement, and 3 months of bank statements. That's generally what we need. There's a couple other disclosures that we need signed, but as far as the paperwork, it's not arduous. And it's much easier than the conventional banks. And not only that, once we have that initial package on file, we can just keep it on file and we're good to go from there on out. So that whole process from the time that you guys reach out to me with the purchase contract and that initial information, we're looking at anywhere from 5 days to 10 business days as far as closing the deals out. Now, one of the reasons why we have the in-house evaluation team is to be able to perform quickly. If we didn't have the evaluation team in-house, it would be very difficult to do that. And the reason for that is because, our evaluation team in-house, they've been with us for a long time. We kind of have our own proprietary ways that we evaluate deals, but it enables us to get numbers back quickly versus waiting for a third-party BPO or appraisal, because we all know how long that can take. So, for instance, on out-of-state deals, when I say out-of-state, I'm talking about outside of California. I can fund deals, even though I'm going to be ordering an appraisal, I can fund deals without having the appraisal done and basing it off our in-house valuation team's numbers. I would prefer to have the appraisal done and completed before I fund, but, we all know that the appraisals can take a while, and it's more of a compliance thing with me, and that's why I always ask for some at least interior photos of the property when we first get the deal, so that way I know that I would still be in a position to fund the deal without an appraisal as long as we have interior photos. So there's the way we work, we're able to have flexibility there and to be able to perform quickly because we've been in this business long enough and we know how important that is. Touching on, as far as like borrower requirements, some maybe guidelines that we're looking at when we're evaluating a borrower. We do run credit. However, again, we're a little bit more asset-based. I just want to make sure that they don't have any recent BKs or foreclosures or short sales, let's just say within the last couple years. They don't have any judgments against them that are going to possibly affect the resale of a property. Credit isn't too much of a concern. It's more of, compliance, running their credit, and just making sure they don't have anything significantly negative on their credit that is just going to kill the deal. Look, if I have someone that filed BK 6 months ago, that's going to be a concern for me. I'm probably not going to lend to them. If they can provide us a credit report that they've run within the last 90 days, I can use that. That will help. Because some people are sensitive on getting their credit run. So, if they provide us with a credit report, we can at least match the credit report to that person, then we can use that. We're not really concerned about post-closing liquidity. If they can show reserves before we fund, we're going to be okay with that. Whatever they end up doing after that, as far as their cash liquidity, it's up to them. But hopefully they're performing as a borrower and getting the job done as far as the property is concerned. Experience, we've kind of already touched on. Foreign nationals, we do lend to foreign nationals as long as they have a company, being a, let's say, an LLC, an S corp, a C corp. And they have a tax identification number, that's fine. And something else to keep in mind, majority of the deals that we fund are to borrowers who are taking title as a corporation, whether it's an LLC or an S corp or a C corp. In certain instances, I can lend to individuals. It varies a lot depending on what state we're lending in, where the property is located, whether it's actually lending to a individual versus a sole member LLC versus a dual member LLC. Those are some things that we can talk about as we're initially discussing the deal, just because it varies from state to state. And the requirements that we have, it's not something that I could, it's not something that we have that I can tell you, okay, this is the case on every deal because it varies. As I mentioned, as far as the state, and then just at our website, I'm hoping that covers quite a bit as far as our company as a whole, my background. Megan, I don't know if you want to open it up for Q&A or if you feel like there's anything that I've missed so far that maybe we want to touch on more.
No, Shane, you did an amazing, amazing job. I didn't want to cut you off there, but yeah, you really gave us like everything we need to know. I actually have a couple questions for you real quick, but I just want to open it up just to see if any of the reps have any questions, so just give me 1 second. All right, guys, does anyone have any questions for Shane about the loans that they do?
Megan, I have a question. This is Kevin in Dallas.
Hey, Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the website right now looking for states that you guys lend in, and I don't see it on the website. Could you point me in the right direction there?
Glad you mentioned that. I don't know, maybe they're working on our website, but let me pull it up. Hold on a second.
Okay. No, I go to your website. So if you're at anchorloans.com, if you actually go to borrow, you see the borrow tab up top?
Yep.
Okay. Just scroll down to the bottom where it says location is key. And I love when lenders do this. You'll see how the states are blue. They're highlighted in blue.
Yeah, there we go.
Those are the states that they are lending in.
Great.
The ones that aren't highlighted in blue, they're not. So,
One other thing I wanted to touch on, because I get this quite a bit, just so we're not wasting time as far as potential deals that are being submitted. The way that we are licensed, we do not lend on any owner-occupied properties. It's strictly investment properties. We avoid owner-occupied loans like the plague. So it's strictly guys that are doing this for a living. So if you guys come across that scenario where, you know, someone's buying a second home and they don't qualify conventionally and they're just looking for a short-term deal, it's something that we don't do. Our main bread and butter type of loans are lending to guys that are doing this for a living, that are flipping houses or developing houses. Those are the guys we really want to be lending to, not just the one-off type of guys that they can't qualify conventionally, so they just need a short-term bridge for, you know, their primary residence or a second home or something like that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shane. Yeah, we get asked that a lot too, so I'm constantly repeating that during the day too. I say probably 10 times during the day that we only do 1 to 4 investment properties, and I always highlight the word investment. You know, most of the borrowers we work with are closing in some type of corporate entity, as you know. That's really how most of our borrowers want to do it. I don't think I've ever done a fix and flip deal or a short-term loan and the borrower didn't close in a corporate entity. Here where I am in PA, some of the hard money lenders here don't mind because PA's laws doesn't require them on a 1 to 4 unit to close in a corporate entity, but we're very up with the state's regulations and stuff as well, so obviously we realize some states just can't do that, so you can make that distinction between a pure commercial loan.
Yeah, and we also, and, you know, I get a lot of calls on land deals, just raw land. Like, we do not like lending on raw land unless there's already approved plans and permits in place to build or an existing structure on the lot. I'm fine with that, but, you know, land deals, do not like lending on land. Trying to think of, you know, what other things that, you know, a lot of calls that I get from, whether it's directly the investor or brokers.
I have a couple of questions for you, actually. So one quick question. Do you guys always require a general contractor be used on the deal for the rehab?
No. We don't really underwrite that. We don't underwrite the how the borrower's handling the repairs. One thing that we're going to do, for instance, when your investor submits a deal and they provide, let's say, the purchase contract, and they say, you know, it's going to cost $30,000 to fix up, and I think the property is going to be worth X once the renovations are done. Really, all we're doing is just, and that's one of the reasons why we ask for an interior photo, so that way we can compare their budget with the interior photos and just make sure it's in line. Whether they're hiring a GC or they're going in themselves and doing the renovation themselves, we don't care.
Okay.
We just want to make sure that the we're going to have someone double check that the rehab budget appears to be in line. If someone submits a $30,000 budget and you pull up the pictures and you know, there's two walls standing, then, you know, we're going to have an issue.
Yeah, I hear you. I usually say to borrowers too, if they're not a licensed general GC, or I always ask them, how do you know it's going to cost that much in repairs? You say, probably to be safe, still get a quote from a licensed GC, whether you plan to use them or not, you know, just so you know what the repairs are going to cost. You mentioned that you want a 1003 or PFS. Is there one you prefer, or do you need both?
I do need both. And we just got set up, too, online to make it easier for our borrowers to be able to fill the application quickly online.
Okay.
And they're able to DocuSign, too, which is nice.
Awesome. Cool. We like that. And then I just want to ask you, obviously we see the states that you lend in, but most lenders, you know, don't want to lend in low population areas and stuff. Do you guys have any general population requirement or anything?
Generally 50,000 minimum is, you know, the areas that we like to lend in. And so that's one of the first things, you know, if you're not familiar with, you know, if it's a high population area, you're not really sure where it's at, there's two things that I would look at. I would look at, you know, how rural the area is and check out the population. Not that we don't lend on deals with populations less than 50,000. But, you know, I would have to submit that to the credit committee for an exception. So take that into consideration. And also, too, like high crime areas, if you look on Trulia, if you type in the address and if it's a very high crime area, it's something most likely we're going to pass on. If we're at extremely low LTV and it's a strong borrower and, you know, again, there's exceptions to everything, but that's generally why. I mean, if anyone calls me and presents a deal to me, you know, I can generally tell you within a couple minutes if it's going to be a deal that we're going to want to do or not. And so, whether it's via email or a quick phone call, you know, feel free to give me a call. We can run through the deal scenario. However you want to set it up, Megan, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, to answer your question, we do have a kind of a standard population minimum of 50,000 and keep the high crime rate areas into consideration as well.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you so much. I just want to see, guys, does anyone have any questions at all for Shane?
Yeah, this is Jim in Indiana. Can you hear me?
Hey, go ahead.
I got a couple of questions here. I came in a little late, so you may have touched on them, but the three I kind of was wondering about, A, is your preferred loan size, how large you would go. B, title work. Do you use local title places here within different states, or you do the title work out there? And the last one was personal guarantees, if you require that.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as loan size, we really don't have a minimum, and our maximum. To be honest, we really don't have a minimum and a maximum. Our largest loan size to date, I believe, was $12 million, and that was in our backyard here in California. I can tell you that. You know, the partners would probably consider a $5 million plus deal out of state. You know, again, depending on the borrower and so forth. As far as the minimum, just one thing to keep in mind is that because it costs us the same to originate a $30,000 loan as it does a $3 million loan. So that's why we generally have a $2,500 or $3,000 minimum origination fee to originate those smaller dollar deals. And so it's something to keep in mind. You know, they could end up paying close to, 10 points on a $30,000 loan if they're paying, you know, $3,000 for that $30,000 loan. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure does. And the personal guarantee issue?
The personal guarantee, yes, we do typically require the borrower to personally guarantee the loan. There are exceptions to that, again. And these exceptions, you know, I just want you guys to keep in mind, it just kind of shows that we're flexible because we come across a lot of different scenarios. There are limited guarantees that we have as well that maybe the borrower, let's just say that they're very, you know, they just absolutely refuse to sign a personal guarantee. I do have the limited guarantee option, which kind of covers us against bad boy acts. It has the bad boy carve-outs in there, which typically protects us just against fraud, misrepresentation, that kind of thing. You know, if we come across that situation and they want to see the personal guarantee versus the limited guarantee, I can send them both and they can review those. And in certain instances too, I've gotten the personal guarantee and the limited guarantee completely waived. It doesn't happen very often, but I have been able to do that. And again, you know, it's going to be more in situations where, you know, it's going to be a heavy volume guy that we think we're going to be doing a lot of business with.
Okay,
and and then to touch on, as far as local title, yeah, you know, we're going to be typically like on purchases, usually like out here in California, the seller usually designates escrow and title, and the closing agents are going to use. So, you know, that's who generally we're going to be using in purchase transactions, and most likely the depending on the state, title and escrow that is recommended by either the borrower or someone that's involved in the transaction who they want to use. Basically, what I'm saying is using escrow and or title outside of California, that's we have no issues with that.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Guys, does anyone else have any other questions at all for Shane?
I have one. Yeah. Victoria.
Hey, go ahead, Victoria.
Hi, I got distracted during this call, so you might have answered this already, but is there a minimum FICO?
No, there is no minimum FICO. So, you know, but like I said, I mean, really the what we're looking at, again, is just anything extremely negative on their credit report to be any recent BK foreclosure or short sale, that will potentially be a straight denial. But you know, if it's, you know, if they got a 550 credit score, but it's mainly just due to lates or whatnot, we'll still lend to that individual.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, I got a question. This is Damon from Seattle.
Hey, Damon.
I you might have covered it. I kind of got in the call a little bit late, so I apologize. But just kind of maybe could you go over the portion of our debt ratios and things like that as far as what you're using to get them qualified for the property as far as income and things?
Yeah, well, we're not really looking at the borrower's income. What we really look at is reserves. Again, we just want to make sure that that borrower has the liquidity to come in with the down payment and have some reserves just in case the construction goes over budget and they're able to debt service the loan. So even though we do have them complete a 1003 application that indicates their income and stuff, again, that's more of a compliance thing. We're not necessarily looking at that to underwrite the borrower. I'm really most concerned with, you know, how much cash they got in the bank is really what I want to know.
Are you looking for a certain amount of reserves beyond their requirement for, you know, 20% or whatever, you know, whatever they get qualified for?
Yeah, you know, just kind of a rule of thumb that you can use is, you know, I'd want to have them be able to provide bank statements that show that they got, let's just say they got to come in with 20%, right? So I'm going to want to see bank statements showing they got the 20% to come in with. And I would factor somewhere in between a 10 and 20% contingency for construction overages. So, you know, I probably want to see at least additional liquidity of $5,000 or $10,000 if they got a $50,000 rehab budget. And, as far as, and then I probably want to see roughly, you know, depending on their loan term, you know, if they got a 6-month loan, you know, I probably want to see that they have at least a couple months to worth of making the payments. If they got a year loan, you know, maybe 6 to 9 months at least to carry it that far. So, you know, I hope that kind of gives you an idea of how we look at things as far as reserves. You know, it's not something that's set in stone. Because the other thing is we're going to be looking at LTVs too. So someone might be a little bit lighter on cash reserves, but we might be lending at 50% LTV. That's going to make it easier to get that deal approved versus trying to get approved a loan where we're high leverage at, you know, let's say 75% of the future value, and they got, you know, really tight reserves. You know, that may call for a loan denial.
Now the payment, is that based on an amortization, like a 30-year amortization, even though it's a short-term loan? What is that based on as far as payments?
Yeah, well, it's interest only. No, it's interest only.
Oh. Okay.
Our terms are generally either 6 months or 12 months. It's interest only, no prepay penalty.
And what happens if for some reason they don't pay that loan off, you know, after the 6 months or the 12 months?
Then we have extension options for the borrower, which generally run at 1 point per 3 months.
And if they don't pay, eventually they have to take the property back. So that's the worst case scenario.
That is the worst case scenario, but one thing I do want to mention, and all the years that we've been doing this, you know, the 18,000 plus loans, the over 3.7 billion in originations, we've taken very few properties back. And one of the reasons that is because foreclosure for us is a last resort, you know. We're going to do everything that we can to work with the borrower as long as they're cooperating and being sensible about the situation. And not saying that, you know, we haven't foreclosed on any deals, because we have. But, you know, again, we have the approach, and that's why when borrowers talk about personal guarantees, you know, I don't think we've ever really gone after someone personally for not being able to perform on a loan. Even though they're signing a personal guarantee, you know, I want them to know that, look, we're going to work with you. If you come into trouble, we're going to work with you and do whatever we can to, you know, help you through the situation. Because everyone has to realize that from a lender standpoint, foreclosures are very time-consuming. They're very costly. It's the last thing we want to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Shane, honestly, that was amazing. Thank you so much for all that information. We've kept you on the phone now for like 45 minutes. So I actually took notes on everything you said, and I usually send out a recap email to our team. And we'll also send out an e-blast to all our borrowers, too, to start originating some loans for you. So I'll ask real quick. Guys, does anyone have any other quick questions for Shane real quick? All right. I think we're good. But, Shane, I just wanted to thank you so much for your time. And, again, I will send out a recap email to the team, and I'll also send out an e-blast. So hopefully we can start getting you some more loans.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who tuned in, and hopefully I answered a majority of the questions that you guys have. And one thing I just want to mention, you know, I'm all about efficiency. You know, I don't like wasting time. I don't want to waste your guys' time. I don't want to waste my time. But I am always available on my cell. You know, I don't know if you want to disseminate that to everyone, Megan, but, you know, if you ever come across a situation, you just want to talk to me for a couple minutes and run a deal scenario by me, feel free to hit me up on my phone or my email. And like I said, I can generally let you know within a couple minutes if it's something we'd be interested in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, it's fine. What all the loan reps here do is all the loans funnel through me. So if they get a scenario, I just do that initial vetting out to make sure simple things. The borrower has the down money. They can pay a broker fee, lender fee. They have some post-closing, you know, have some payments on hand to make these payments. So I vet out their experience. And I'm also the processor for everyone as well. So I'm the one who's actively collecting their documents. vetting the borrower out to make sure all this stuff at least makes sense so I can lob you the call and say, hey, I think I have something for you here.
Great.
So, again, Shane, thank you so much for your time. Guys, thank you so much for being on the call. We have a great turnout on the call today, so this is really exciting. And, Shane, actually, I'll probably call on you in a little bit. I may actually have a new deal for you.
All right, perfect. I'll be in a meeting from about 1 to 3, so I won't be available till after about 3 p.m. Pacific time.
That's fine. Again, thank you so much for the call. And, guys, thanks so much for being on. Everyone have a great Thanksgiving if I don't talk to you. Bye, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.